Hey, welcome everyone. So we'll get going. Welcome back from lunch. Last full day of Tech Ed. Everyone, I guess, ready for the big party tonight, hopefully. Great. A few precursor questions. So first, my name's Stephen Barron. I'm a lead program manager on the Virtual Machine Manager team. And a couple of the main areas that I focus on are our services and application deployment concepts. So background questions. I gave a session a couple days ago on service template creation. How many folks were in that? Okay, good. And now some more background. How many folks are familiar with VMM 2008 R2? And with VMM 2012? And with services in particular? Great, so we're gonna start from the ground up because those hands dwindled as the questions went on. Services are a new concept that we introduced in VMM 2012 RTM, so I'm gonna cover those from the ground up. And I'll point out things around services that come online with our SP1 release. And I'll talk about some of the constraints that were involved with services and RTM and why we made some of these SP1 changes. This is just a broad overview of VMM. I'm not going to spend any time on this slide, but when you download the slide, slides afterwards for review, you'll see we made a broad range of investments in 2012 RTM compared to 2008 R2, and we continue those investments in SP1. And SP1 has a lot of new features, lots of sessions this week. There's, I think, a couple going on right now, so clearly, after the conference, go ahead and watch those videos, download the slide decks for other areas of VMM, such as basic fabric management, our private cloud concept, and then some of the infrastructure enhancements that we made to the virtual machine manager server itself. So services in 2012 and SP1. Looks like most folks were familiar with VMM 2008 R2, so I'm going to start there. And we had this concept in VMM 2008 R2 of a virtual machine template, or a VM template. And really, at its core, a VM template was three things. It was one or more virtual disks, and then it was a hardware profile, which, just as it sounds, describes the hardware characteristics of a particular virtual machine that you want to provision, how much memory does it have, how many processors does it have, NIC information, and so forth. And finally, there was a guest OS profile. And really, what that was a common set of properties that you usually wound up specializing in terms of Windows specialization, things like, what's the local admin password going to be? And what's the computer name of the machine when it's provisioned? And which domain should it be joined to? And what are the credentials to join that machine to the domain? And while you could do this with an unattend, we made a guest OS profile to give that those properties sort of first-class support within VMM. And if there were things that you wanted to set that we didn't expose, particular to Windows OS specialization, like which OU should the machine join, we gave you the opportunity to attach a custom unattend to that guest OS profile, and we'd go ahead and merge the settings at deployment time, and that machine would be provisioned per your specifications. And when we started the planning for VMM 2012, we looked at VM templates, and we came up with at least three what we felt were real shortcomings of that paradigm. So they were great for repeatedly and reliably deploying a single virtual machine at a time. But typically, when you're deploying a business service or some distributed application, especially in QA, staging, and production environments, you don't actually cram all of your application components on one standalone machine. Typically, a business service is spread across multiple machines. If you think about a typical two- or three-tier application, you probably have a web front end that's perhaps load balanced, so there's actually multiple instances running that front end, maybe a middle tier with some business logic components, and then finally a back-end tier, a data tier, usually running SQL Server. So that was one problem. VM templates only described a single virtual machine at a time. Problem number two was the range of things that you could do inside that VM at provisioning time were really limited to Windows OS specialization. You could attach a GUI run once script or something to the guest OS profile, but it really wasn't robust to get those servers configured in the way you wanted. And if you think about an operating system like Windows Server 2008 R2 or, of course, Windows Server 2012, if you just deploy a base OS with no roles and features enabled, it's nearly impossible for that machine to be doing anything useful in the environment. Even if you want it to be a file server, right? That's a role or a role service that you have to enable. So with service templates, we tried to give you a far richer range of in-guest configuration options, and we'll speak about all of those. And the third problem with VM templates was they were kind of a fire and forget operation for us. And what I mean by that is when you deployed an instance from a virtual machine template, so when you deployed an actual virtual machine, that machine maintained no reference, no relationship back to the template from which it was provisioned. And this causes a few problems. One, if you made a mistake in the template or if you wanted to modify something over time, like maybe you had a standard web server template and you gave it a certain hardware config and you went and deployed 40 of those out in the environment and it turns out that that hardware config in really all cases is too small, for example. There's no easy way to go back and update all of those machines because you don't even know which machines were actually provisioned from that template unless you recorded it somewhere out of band to VMM. So with services, we tried to solve all three of these problems. And service templates really do build upon base VM templates. But a service template allows you to model multiple machines in a single template. And those machines can have different characteristics. So that solves problem number one of a VM template only modeling a single type of machine. The second thing a service template does is it allows you to do a far richer set of in-guest configuration features. Those are things like deploy web deploy applications into that machine, or enable Windows Server roles and features when you're deploying the machine, or deploy a server app V package, a SQL data tier application. It allows you to actually create a SQL server from scratch if you have a prepared instance of SQL. So that solves problem number two. And problem number three, we solved by whenever you deploy an instance from a service template, so you deploy an actual group of machines out into the environment, that instance will maintain a reference, a relationship, back to the template and the version of the template from which it was provisioned. And the way you actually go about updating those instances is you copy the template, give it a new version, and then you make your changes and apply that updated template to one or more instances in the environment. So if you think about a very simple service that has no applications involved whatsoever, it's just roles and features, you could imagine that you could design a service template with a single tier and a single VM, and all you're going to do is set up the basic IIS roles and features that define a standard IIS server in your environment. And maybe you go through and you do that, and people wind up using that service template, and they deploy 80 web servers out into the environment. And it turns out that almost all of those web servers needed the IIS 6 management compatibility feature, and that wasn't enabled in the original template. In the past, you would have either had to find some way to script that across those 80 machines, log into each of them manually and enable that, or just tell the users, well, you're an admin, just go ahead and configure that. But now that instance is out of whack with the template from which it was provisioned. With VMM 2012, you could copy that template, make the changes, so enable the IIS 6 management compatibility feature, and then apply that updated template to one or more instances in the environment. We'll diff the templates, figure out the changes, and then just apply the changes. And you could either apply them immediately, or you could defer them to some scheduled maintenance window. So if it was an intrusive feature addition, like maybe MSMQ that requires a reboot, you could go ahead and defer that to, say, a 2 a.m. maintenance window, and then apply the changes. You can also apply hardware changes via that, and we'll go ahead and shut the machines down if required, reconfigure the hardware, and start them back up. So you'll see on this slide that I talk about native application types, and those are, again, web deploy, server app V, and SQL data tier applications, or DAC packs. Now, the reason I call those native or first-class applications is you can drop those types of packages into the VMM library. We'll actually refresh them in, but more importantly, we'll refresh the metadata associated with those packages, such as web deploy parameters or server app V package properties. And you can use those to allow the end user to specialize things at deployment time. So if you think about a web application that has a connection string, you could model that in a service template, and you could model it in such a way that you want the end user to provide you connection string information at deployment time. And that allows you to take that single template, deploy it to dev, QA, staging, and production, and maybe the only thing that changes at deployment time is that connection string. And we'll remember those values for the lifetime of that service instance. For other types of applications, so what if you're not leveraging these, or what if you have an MSI-based application? We give you a framework called GCEs, or generic command execution, and that allows you to inject arbitrary payload inside of a VM at provisioning time or at update time, and also execute an arbitrary script. And we'll give you pretty rich control over how that script operates, and we'll walk through all of this stuff in a bunch of demos. So why would you use services? Well, one, it allows you to really model and manage those multi-tier applications, those distributed apps, as a single unit. And what I mean by manage them is you can deploy them as a unit, start them, stop them, delete them as a unit, and then update them as a unit as well. We give you scale out for certain tiers if you've marked them as a scale out tier, and we introduced a new scale out wizard, or you could automate that by calling our PowerShell layer. So by using integration with System Center Operations Manager, you could define some performance metrics that indicate to you when a particular tier of an application should scale out, and the remediation of that would actually call our PowerShell to go ahead and scale out. One of the most important benefits of services, though, really is that last bullet item, this composability aspect. When we talked to lots of customers in the past, we found out that they maintained a number of images in their environment. Maybe they would maintain a sysprepped image for a web server, right, that had those roles and features and a particular IIS configuration baked into the image, and a sysprepped image for an app server, a sysprepped image for a BizTalk server, a sysprepped image for a SharePoint server, and the list goes on and on. Number one, that's a lot of images to maintain, right? They consume a bunch of space, but the maintenance of those images becomes really problematic because when you need to make a change to that image, like maybe, again, you sysprepped an IIS image and it didn't have the exact set of features that you actually required and you found this out a couple months later, you have to rehydrate the image, make your changes, re-sysprep it, and then make sure people are using the right version of that image. And if you have small configuration changes that you want to embed in the image, again, it's a process of rehydrating the image, making changes, and re-sysprepping it. If you define your customizations using service templates in VMM, you can imagine that you could get by in many cases with a single Server 2008 R2 base OS image that's sysprepped but has no roles and features enabled, has no configuration specific to your company's requirements in that image. And you define all those customizations in a service template. And those are really small. They exist only in our database. You can back them up to the file system, so you don't have to worry about data loss. But now you can take a single Server 2008 R2 image and via the service template transform it into an IIS server, a BizTalk server, a SharePoint server, a line of business application, a distributed service, just by defining those customizations and your requirements in the template itself, as opposed to baking them into the image. So the service lifecycle management for us really consists of four phases. The first one, of course, is you have to create your template, because you can't deploy a service unless you have an existing service template. Then you customize deployment. And what I mean by that is when you define settings in the template that you want the end user to specialize, when they deploy an instance of that service, they're going to get prompted for those for the values of those settings. And they're going to customize the deployment of that instance per their requirements. Finally, they're going to deploy the service after they've specified any values that they need to have specified. And then they're going to update the template and apply that to services. So that may be I have a new version of an application package that was delivered by my dev team. Or maybe I need to make a hardware change to this service. Or maybe I need to apply some additional roles and features to instances of that service. Again, I copy the template and apply it to one or more and make my changes and then apply the updated template, the new version, to one or more running instances. So we're going to start with the create template portion of the lifecycle. We introduced in VMM 2012 a new UI, a service designer, that allows you to model service templates. And again, a service template could be as simple as a single machine with a collection of roles and features, or it could be as advanced as a four-tier application where each tier has different characteristics, different application packages, and different scripts associated with it. Your template's going to define not only the tiers of that service, but also their connectivity, their load balancer requirements. So in VMM 2012, we introduced a real rich set of integration features with load balancers that are out there, such as Microsoft NLB, Citrix NetScalers, and BigIP F5s. So if you've integrated VMM with one or more of those load balancers, you can mark a tier of a service as behind a load balancer. And at deployment time and servicing time, we'll take care of actually putting the instances in that tier behind the load balancer, creating the VIP, creating the pool, setting the right pool properties per your specification, such as does the tier require affinity or non-affinity? And if it does require affinity, what's the mechanism used? Is it, you know, source IP address or cookie-based? And what's the load balancing algorithm? Deployed services, as I mentioned, always link to their templates. So once you've taken a service template and deployed at least one instance of it into the environment, so long as that instance is running, that version of the template is read-only. Because we don't want you making changes to that, since it's the source of truth for any deployed services that are linked to it. We want you to copy the template, make your changes, and apply the updated template. Now, if you have service templates that don't have any running instances, you can certainly delete those out of the environment or modify them. And typically, when you're designing your service in the service designer, information like actual hosts or actual physical load balancers that service instances might leverage, that's usually not available at design time. So our placement engine, when you go ahead and deploy a service, will validate based on the target of the deployment, whether it's a particular private cloud or a particular host group in the environment, that that host group or cloud has access to all the resources that that service has expressed that it needs, such as a load balancer of particular type or that can meet a particular configuration, enough memory and processor and access to the right networks for that particular service. And the placement engine will go ahead and give you a, you know, thumbs up or a thumbs down, star ratings in the host case. And if it can't place that service into that environment for whatever reason, it'll give you sensible error information as to what requirements could not be met and why it couldn't be placed. So I'm going to walk through at a high level the building blocks of services, and then we'll switch over to a demo in a few minutes, and I'll show you each of these where they'll probably become a little more clear. So in VMM, most folks were familiar with 2008 R2. You probably know we have this concept of a VMM library, where in the past you drop building blocks of virtual machines, things like virtual hard disks, unattend files, guest OS profiles were in there, PowerShell scripts, and so forth. And we still have all of that rich support in the library, but the library also has support for new types of packages, such as web deploy packages, server at V packages, SQL data tier applications, and what we call custom resources. Custom resources are simply folders that you create in a VMM library share that end in a .cr extension. So you could call one mywebapp.cr, mycustominstaller.cr, and what the library will do is refresh in the fact that there's a folder there available, a custom resource. We won't refresh in all the individual files that happen to be in that folder, but now that folder is available for you to say in a service template, I want you to deliver the contents of this folder into the VM as payload, and I want you to execute this particular script. So if you had an MSI, for example, that you needed to install, you could create maybe a CMD file that calls MSI exec slash QN slash I in the name of that MSI, and you could put that MSI and the CMD in a folder in a VMM library and call it myapp.cr, and then you can have us inject that payload into the VM at deployment time and execute that CMD file, for example. And we'll give you control over how the script works, like reboot behavior and matching standard error, standard out, and telling us what to do for particular exit codes and so forth. We include some custom resources by default. So if you install VMM in a non-highly available manner, we create a default library share, and we'll give you these four custom resources by default. If you've installed VMM in an HA fashion as part of a failover cluster, when you add a library share, we'll always give you an option in the UI or from the command line to also add default resources. And what that means is you want us to copy these four default custom resources into that library share. And those custom resources give you scripts that we've written as well as the executables required to install web deploy x86 and x64, server at V, the agent x86 and x64, and the server at V sequencer. So if you're leveraging server at V or web deploy, you can use our default custom resources to allow you to get the agent out there, or you could create a service for a server at V sequencing station that consists of one machine running the sequencer and one machine running the agent, for example, to allow you to easily sequence apps and then test them. Generic command execution I spoke about. This is where we'll allow you, again, to deliver custom payload and execute arbitrary scripts inside of a guest VM. You can specify things like what's the security context that the script should run under. If you leave that blank, we'll execute as local system, but you can define what are called run as accounts in VMM. So if you had a custom resource that had to call out to an installer on a network share, for example, you could create a run as account that's a domain account, tell us to execute that script as that domain account, and make sure that that domain account has access to that network share. And that's the security context under which we'll run. I mentioned configurable service settings, and we'll talk about those a little later on. But if you had a script that took parameters and you wanted those parameters to be specified by the end user, you could mark those parameters as what we call configurable service settings as well, so that the end user can give you those values at deployment time, and we'll go ahead and append them to that script where you've told us to. In SP1, or in RTM, scripts to us really are a black box, because we don't know what the contents of that custom resource folder is, and more importantly, if you're executing a PowerShell script or a VB script or some CMD file, we don't actually know what that script is doing, right? The script itself is a black box to us. So in RTM, when you deployed or serviced a service, if one of your generic command execution scripts failed, maybe it required network connectivity and you had a loss of network connectivity at the time, when you restarted the VMM job to go ahead and try to restart that deployment, we would skip the failed script because we didn't know if it was safe to rerun it or not, right? Maybe it did something that shouldn't be run twice. In SP1, we've given you an option to mark a script as what we call idempotent. And what that means is when you restart a VMM job, if that script is what caused the initial failure, you can mark that script and tell us, I want you to re-execute this script when I restart the VMM job. So you're essentially telling us, it's safe to rerun this script. So in the case that maybe you lost network connectivity during the initial script run, and you've gone and taken care of that issue out of band, when you restart the job, if you've marked the script as such, we will go ahead and re-execute it from scratch. We give you multiple entry points in our service model to actually define where and how you want to run scripts. We have at the application level, so when you're installing a particular application, like a particular web deploy package, a particular data tier application, you can go ahead and execute a script before installation, after installation, before and after installation. And also, before or after any applications have been installed on that device, you can execute scripts. Now, in RTM, we only allow you to execute one script for each type. So you could execute one pre-install script, one post-install script. So if you had four things you wanted to do in the pre-install phase, we required that you wrote your own master script, for example, that then called each of the four subscripts that you wanted to run. In SP1, we'll allow you to define for pre- and post-install only, at the global level, multiple ordered scripts that you want to run. So if you had four or five things that you wanted to run, and you needed individual reboot and exit code behavior over each of those, you wouldn't have to build that logic into a master script in SP1. You could just add each of those four scripts in a certain order that you want us to execute, and tell us what the behavior is between them, and what the exit codes and reboot behavior is. SQL profiles. SQL 2008 R2 introduced an ability to create a sysprep instance of SQL. And the way you do this is you walk through the SQL installation wizard, you choose the advanced option, and there's an option to prepare an instance of SQL. And what you do is it walks you through an abbreviated setup, and you give it an instance ID that you're going to sysprep, and after that's done, you sysprep the OS. And now what you have, if you fired up a VM from that VHD and went to the start menu, there would be an option to complete that installation of SQL. And it would walk you again through a mini setup wizard that would allow you to specialize it. So we introduced a SQL profile in VMM 2012 RTM that allows you to take a prepared image that has a prepared instance of SQL, tell us how you want that instance specialized, like is the SQL server going to be in mixed mode or Windows mode for authentication purposes? If it's in mixed mode, what's the SA password? Do you want TCP/IP or name pipes enabled? Who are the initial SQL admins and so forth? And what we'll do is we'll actually complete the installation of SQL at provisioning time. So by the time that VM is up and running, what you really have is a fully functioning SQL server that's ready to either receive data tier applications or ready to turn over for more advanced configuration. And similar to our unattend file concept in the guest OS profile, if you have some settings that we haven't exposed in our SQL profile that you want us to configure, you can attach a custom SQL configuration INI, and we'll go ahead and merge the settings in that file with the settings that you specified in our UI. I mentioned most of the things that will allow you to specialize. So in VMM 2012 RTM, this functionality was available for prepared instances of SQL 2008 R2. In VMM 2012, we maintain that support, and SP1, we maintain that support, and we also introduce support for completing prepared instances of SQL 2012. What we heard from customers when we first started discussing these ideas back a couple and a half years ago was, this is a great idea, and lots of times I will use standalone SQL servers in my dev environment for dev purposes, but usually when I'm running applications in QA, staging, and especially in production, each application doesn't actually get its own database server, right? I typically have a clustered SQL server that's out there in the environment. It's very big, it's very beefy, and it's hosting tens, if not hundreds, of databases for multiple applications. So we created a concept in VMM 2012 RTM called an application host. And an application host, there was one type in 2012 RTM, and it was a SQL Server application host. What this allowed you to do was create an application profile in VMM, and that application profile could only contain SQL DAC packs and T-SQL scripts. But you could use that app profile and deploy it to an existing SQL server out in the environment, whether it's physical, virtual, clustered, what have you. So you could use the service template concept, define your applications that you wanted installed, but you could actually install those databases on some existing SQL server. The reason that a SQL app host can only take SQL databases and T-SQL scripts is that we don't put a guest agent there, because VMM may not even be managing that server. It may be a physical SQL cluster, so we can't execute arbitrary scripts. But using the DAC framework, we can remotely deploy databases and execute T-SQL scripts, assuming you've given us a run-as account with sufficient permissions. So that was great for 2012 RTM, but we heard a very similar story for web applications, where people said, lots of times, I don't give my applications their own IIS server. Rather, I have some IIS farm in the environment, and it hosts tens, if not hundreds, of applications. So in SP1, we've introduced support for a web application host as well. And that application host can only accept packages of web deploy type. So if you have Microsoft web deploy applications, you can go ahead and deploy them to an existing IIS server or farm in the environment, whether, again, it's physical, virtual, managed by VMM or not. And the nice thing about app hosts is those configurable service settings that I spoke about that allow you to elicit end user input at deployment time for particular values, you can make the application host server name a configurable service setting, which allows you, again, to take a single service template, and when a user deploys, they'll tell you, this is the SQL server at deployment time that I want the databases deployed to, or this is the IIS server that I want the web deploy packages deployed to. So again, you can leverage that single template, that single recipe that you know works, and deploy it to multiple environments and allow multiple people to leverage that. So finally, configurable service settings. The way you mark these in a template is you give us a friendly variable name, whatever you want, and you just prepend it and append it with the at symbol. So if I wanted to ask an end user at deployment time for connection string information, and that comprises a SQL server name, a database name, a SQL user, and a SQL password, in the connection string itself, and I'll show you how this works, you could go ahead and say, well, I have a variable that's called at SQL space server space name at, or at SQL space user at, or at website name at, and then we'll prompt the end user at deployment time for the values. And when you create configurable service settings in the template, you can mark those settings in one of, or in multiple ways. One, you can say that a particular setting is mandatory or optional, and if it's mandatory, the user won't be allowed to deploy until they've given us a value. You can mark them as encrypted or unencrypted, so perhaps there's a password field that you're getting from the user. You can mark that as an encrypted field to not only mask it in our UI, but also make sure that we're storing and transmitting it securely. And finally, you can give a setting a default value. So maybe you have a timeout setting for a particular web application, and that setting can vary from 120 seconds up to 360, and you change it depending on, is it going into QA or production? You could mark it as a service setting, but also give the user a sensible default value of 240, for example, and they could override that should they choose to do so. We provide a few predefined service settings that you can use in a model, and we won't ask the end user for the values because we know those values. One of the more useful ones is the at computer name, all one at service setting. If you use that, maybe you have a script that you want to run on a machine and it needs to know the machine name that it's being run on. You could just use that as a parameter to that script, and VMM is going to fill that in for you at deployment time, and we're going to make sure that we execute with the right value. And again, we don't have to prompt the user for that value because we know what it is. This is the service designer. It's included in the deck for a reference. We're going to jump into a demo real soon. So this is what it looks like. This is a three-tier application with a web middle tier and a SQL data tier. We have the ribbon. There's a designer canvas that's, for the most part, drag and drop in terms of VM templates, and then you can modify properties of those. And then we have, again, the properties of whatever is selected in the designer at that point in time. So the recommendation going forward really is to wrap all of your VM templates, even if it's a standalone single VM, in a service template. And the reason for that is once you've deployed a VM from a VM template, you can never retrofit it to be part of a service, and you can't take advantage of services-related features like role feature configuration, application deployment, and script execution. Now, even if you're not taking advantage of those in a particular VM template initially, if you simply drag that VM template into the service designer and click deploy, you'll have a standalone VM. It'll look just like the VM template. But in the future, you always have the opportunity, once you've done that, to go back to the template and maybe add some additional things like some roles and features, an application, a generic script that you want to execute, and then you can apply that updated template to that single instance and have us orchestrate those changes for you. Again, I want to be super clear. Once you've deployed a VM from a VM template, you cannot take advantage of application deployment features on that VM. There's no way to make it part of a service and no way to transition it so that it refers to a service template. So even for your standalone VM templates, it's a drag and drop operation in the designer. And if you have self-service users, you can do your VM template authoring to create building blocks for them, but only grant them access to service templates so that you know that you not only can take advantage of those features should you choose to do so later, but you also have those relationships back to the service template. So if someone changes something out of band, like the hardware config, you could write a PowerShell script that would easily go out, find all the instances of running services, look at the service template that they reference, and see if there's any diffs, even in something as simple as the hardware config. So in VMM 2008, these were the template components we had. We spoke about these right at the beginning. VHDs, hardware profiles, and guest OS profiles. Service templates do build on these concepts. So the first thing we did was we added a computer tier template. And really all that is a VM template with some additional properties about the tier itself. Is it a scale-out tier? How many default instances should be in that tier? How many upgrade domains, and so forth? And the computer tier template is contained by a service template. And you can have one or more of these in a service template. So if you have a single VM, you have a single tier. If you have a two-tier application, web and data, you have two tiers. If you have a three-tier application, three tiers, and so on. The VM templates, we also introduced a new type of profile called an application profile. This is where you define application packages that you want to deploy to a VM. This is where you define those arbitrary scripts that you want to execute. And an application profile can contain one or more application deployments. So you could have a single app profile that deploys 4 web deploy packages, executes 2 scripts, deploys 2 SQL packages, and a server app V package. You don't have to limit them to only one type of object. Pre- and post-install GCEs, these are, again, the extensible scripts, so custom script execution for you to take advantage of. They're totally optional. And then in the guest OS profile, we augmented that object to include role and feature definition. So you can enable Server 2008 R2 or Windows Server 2012, once we get to beta, roles and features inside of a VM, either at deployment or servicing time. The SQL profile I spoke about, that's what we use to complete a prepared instance of SQL. So that's where you'll define what that SQL server should look like when we're done provisioning it. And it can contain one or more SQL deployments. So if you needed to deploy a SQL server that has 3 or 4 instances, you can do that with one SQL profile. We have a load balancer template. Again, this is to tell us that a particular tier should be behind the load balancer, and we'll take care of wiring it up, assuming the integration's been performed. And then we have the application host profiles for deploying SQL databases or, in SP1, web deploy packages to existing servers in the environment, whether they're physical, virtual, managed by VMM or not. And finally, at the service template level, we'll expose all the configurable service settings that you've modeled inside of a particular template. So now I'm going to switch over to one of my demo machines. And what this machine is running is an early build. After I reconnect, is an early build of VMM 2012, and this build will have VMM services running in it. Now, to be clear, we have a CTP1 that's out right now, and that CTP1 does not have any of our new services enhancements for SP1, so services in that behave just like they would in 2012 RTM, although we haven't done extensive testing on the CTP1 version because we were making so many changes. So when we release our beta sometime later this year, that's when all the SP1-related features that I'm talking about are going to light up for you. So my machine is connecting. I have another demo machine also. And it's going to have to reconnect. So let me go ahead and get that one going. Are there any questions so far? I'm happy to take questions as we're going along. If it winds up that there's too many, I may ask you, you know, to hold them to the end. But for now, any questions? Okay, so we'll just give this a second to connect. Yes, question? The question was, is there a performance impact by putting everything inside the service template? No, because at initial deployment time, we're just going to take care of that after Windows has been specialized. So your deployment, certainly if you had a VM template that you deployed that had no configuration in it, it may take, let's say, 8 minutes. And if you're doing a service template deployment that happens to have, you know, 3 app packages, some role feature install, and some arbitrary script execution, it's actually, you know, of course it's going to take longer, but you have to balance that versus doing those things manually. Right? So maybe it adds 2 or 3 minutes to the deployment time, but you know at the end of the day that that machine got provisioned exactly as you specified via the service template. Okay, so I'll start out here with my VMM system, and I'll show you a deployed instance of a service. So one of the other nice things is when you deploy services through us, for the first class application types, we'll actually show you the apps that we've installed inside of a particular VM, and we'll show you all the settings associated with that application. So if I switch over into my library, libraries are where you're going to find your service templates and your normal VM templates. I have a number of service templates here, and the first one I'm going to show you is this distributed blog service template. And this one is a pretty simple 2-tier application. It has a server tier, and it's got a data tier. And in my server tier, I'm running a server app V package. And I'll just zoom in 100% so everyone can see this. And in my data tier, I'm provisioning a SQL server and installing a DAC pack. So if I start with the server tier, first by just looking at its properties, if you look at the bottom here, you can see I've marked this one as a scale-out tier. And I've said that whenever I deploy an instance of this service, I'll start out with 1 instance in the tier, and I can scale up to a maximum of 2, and I always need a minimum of 1. I could certainly say that I want to start out with 4 instances and have a maximum of 20 and a minimum of 5, or a minimum of 4 if I wanted to. So that's all controllable by you. And we also have application deployment order. And both of these tiers have an application deployment order of 1. Now, application deployment order, I don't want you to confuse it with VM deployment order. The application deployment order only tells us when to start the ingest configuration relative to another tier. So if you had 4 tiers, and you had decided that you needed application deployment orders 1, 2, 3, and 4 on them, so you need your data tier up first, your business tier up second, and your web service tier up third, and your front end tier fourth, we'll actually provision, create, and do Windows OS specialization of all the machines in parallel. And then after we've finished that specialization, then we'll go ahead and stagger the application deployment order per what you've told us in the template. If you mark them all with an application deployment order of 1, we'll just do everything in parallel, from VM creation to application deployment. So if I go into the properties of my server tier, the first thing I want you to notice is that a computer tier template really is a VM template. And once this paints, you'll see all the normal VM template options, such as the hardware configuration, where I define memory and processor, OS config. Again, this is where I define how I want the Windows operating system to be specialized. We support the use of computer patterns here. So in this case, VMM is going to generate machines for me that are called SBBlogWeb0001, 0002, and we'll keep track of the names that we've dished out and the names we've reclaimed through VM deletion. But to be clear, if you have a VM or if you have a machine in the environment that's outside of VMM's control, we don't validate the name we generate against Active Directory to see if there's another machine. We only keep track of the machines that we're aware of. So as a best practice, you may want to first, you know, right before you deploy, verify that the machine names we generated are actually available for use in the environment. In the OS configuration I mentioned, this is really identical to 2008 R2, with the exception of roles and features. So in this case, I know that my package needs a bunch of web server related roles, so I've enabled the application server role, the .NET Framework 3.5.1, the web server role is down here enabled along with ASP.NET, and I've enabled the .NET Framework 3.5.1 features as well. So at deployment time, we're going to go ahead and enable all these roles and features. I've joined it to a domain, and I've also attached my own custom unattend file because I want to make sure that whenever I deploy instances that RDP is enabled and my account's added to the local admin group. So I attach a custom unattend that does that for me. You could do something very similar. Now I'll pull up the data tier to show you a couple different the other thing I wanted to show you was what you will notice on a computer tier template as well is the application configuration. So on this tier, I'm installing a server app v application that has a number of properties, and I'm executing a pre-install script. So before this application package gets installed, I want to make sure that the server app v agent is there, because if it's not, this package isn't going to start up since it's a server app v package. So I mentioned those default resources that VMM includes, and I'll show you what this one in particular looks like. So if I go to my default VMM library share, we have this directory that VMM created called Application Frameworks, and inside of it, there's 4 custom resource folders. And again, it's a custom resource simply because it ends in .cr. So these will be refreshed into the VMM library and available for use. So in the SAVX64 custom resource, for example, you'll see there's a number of executables, such as the server app v agent commandlet, the PowerShell commandlet setup, the server app v agent setup, server app v sequencer, the sequencer commandlets, and even web deploys MSI. And then we've included 2 default CMD files for you to use to install the server app v agent. We've included exit code behavior and things like that. So if I switch back to my application profile, you'll see that I've specified that custom resource package. And if I click browse, we're only going to show you the custom resource packages that are available in the library. So I chose the server app v x64 one. And then I specified that the executable program I'm running is CMD, because I'm just going to call a CMD file, and I passed in the /q and /c parameters to make sure it runs quietly and suppresses output, called my CMD file that VMM provided for me, along with a /w parameter that tells it to also install the web deploy framework. And these commandlets, these scripts are fully documented out on TechNet. And again, we include them for server app v and web deploy, x64 and x86. I specified a timeout of 1800 seconds here, and a run as account of just local system. If I wanted to run this as a domain account, I could certainly do that. And then in the advanced section, I've specified that I want VMM, the agent inside the VM, to go ahead and write the standard error and standard output to text files on the VM. So that if something goes wrong, I can log into that VM and see what was actually returned by standard output and standard error. I didn't match anything, but if I wanted to, I could try to match certain strings that come back or regular expressions that come back from standard error or standard out, and I could decide to tell VMM, well, if I match something there, either standard error, standard out, or an exit code, what should I do? Should I fail the job and allow you to troubleshoot, or should I just warn you that this script returned this, you know, it matched this particular exit code, or standard output matched this string that you gave us, and just warn and continue? And then finally, there's restart behavior that you can control. So you can tell us to always restart the machine after the script is finished executing, and we'll go ahead and pick up in the deployment where we left off after that reboot. Or you can tell us to restart if we find a particular exit code, such as a 1641 or a 3010. We include some common ones here, but you can include your own. And then you can tell us, after the machine has restarted, go ahead and restart that script. So now I'm going to move to the data tier of this particular service template so that I can show you a couple other things that are different from the server tier. The first one is the SQL Server configuration. So this particular VM is using a VHD that has a prepared instance of SQL Server inside of it. And by adding a SQL Server deployment, I'm able to tell VMM a few things. One, what is the name of the instance that was sysprepped? So when I went through the SQL installation to create that prepared instance, I gave it an instance ID. And that instance ID was sysprep SQL. So I need that information to know what instance I'm going to specialize. Then I tell VMM, for this SQL deployment, what do I want the instance name to be after I'm done completing the installation? I just want the default. If I left it blank, that's what we would use. I put it in here just to be clear that I want it to be MS SQL Server, which is the default. If I wanted it to be some custom instance name, that's where I'd put that information. I can give a product key, and I can also decide which installation run as account should be used. I'm going to use local system, but what I will point out is when you complete a prepared install of SQL, that completion, the SQL completion, actually needs access to the SQL setup media. Now, I pre-baked it into my VHD, but maybe you don't want to include that 1 gig or 1.2 gig inside of each of your sysprepped VHDs. You could have it on a network share, and we can access it remotely. The only caveat there is if you do that, you're going to have to make sure that your installation run as account is an account that has access to that share. So in that case, I'd probably use a domain account and make sure that that domain account had access to that share that had the SQL setup media in it. Also on configuration, I can specify the initial SQL admins. I can say, what do I want the security mode to be for SQL when it's done, mixed mode or Windows mode? And if it is mixed mode, what's the SA password? Do I want TCP/IP and or named pipes enabled? And again, similar to the unattend functionality, I can attach a custom SQL Server configuration INI. And finally, I can specify the identity of the service accounts for all the core SQL services that are going to be run. Now, if I go back here to this particular package, this server.v package uses a connection string to talk to that database when it's been deployed. So I mentioned configurable service settings a couple times. And if I look at this server.v package, I can see that it has a property called connection string. And I'll just expand this window so you can see it a little clearer. And that connection string has this value of And I went in and modified this so that I'll ask the end user at deployment time for the SQL Server name. You can see here, I did that by specifying a variable called at SQL space server at. And I want the SQL user and SQL password. So I created variables for those as well. Now, if I go to the properties of the service template itself, that's where I could modify the attributes of those configurable service settings. So here on the service settings tab, we'll show you all the service settings and where they're in use. And I could double click any of them and say, this must be mandatory, right? So I need a value for the SQL password before I let the user deploy. It must be encrypted. In this case, I haven't chosen to encrypt the password, and I could provide a default value, and I could even give them a sensible description if my variable name wasn't clear enough, and I wanted to make sure that they understood what I was asking them for. So again, in the designer, you'll see this is a distributed blog service template version 1.0, and if I go back into my regular VMM UI, you can see that I have one of these deployed somewhere, right here, and it's pointing to that template, distributed blog, version 1.0, and if I drill into it, you'll see that I actually do have my two tiers with a single VM in each tier. This VM has my server at V package, and this VM has my database that I deployed. So I'm going to switch back to the deck. So that was what a service template looks like. Now we'll talk about customizing deployment. So again, I may ask the end user for input at deployment time. So what this does is it prepares that template for deployment. So the user clicks configure deployment, They fill in values that they need. They could change things that VMM generated. Maybe they don't like the computer name that we generated. They have a chance to modify that. They can modify things like the VHD disk name in some cases. And most importantly, they specify those application settings that I've asked them for. And again, that really allows you to take a single recipe for a particular service and deploy it into multiple environments, only specializing it for that environment. So what's the dev connection string? What's the QA connection string? And again, we'll remember those values for the lifetime of that service instance. This is what the deployment preview looks like. The settings are over there on the top left. This is where I'm going to ask the user for input. In this case, they've chosen to deploy to a private cloud. They'll override these settings and give values for all the mandatory ones and even optional ones should they choose to do so. And then they'll click a simple button to go ahead and deploy that service. Now, when they click that, this is the way we actually go ahead and deploy the service. We'll first select a tier based on deployment order. And remember, I spoke about application deployment order. We'll provision the VMs in parallel and specialize the operating system. Then if there is an app deployment order, we'll select the right tier to start out with. We'll go ahead and create the VM. We'll power on and wait for the VM. And then we'll inject an agent. We'll install a VMM guest agent that we use to do all this application deployment and role feature enablement. We'll execute any scripts that have been defined. So first at the application profile level, followed by installing any particular applications and executing scripts associated with them. If applicable, we'll go ahead and add that to the load balancer, and then we're done with that tier, and we might move on to the next tier should there be another tier to go ahead and deploy. I showed you the application view already. Any of the first-class applications we deploy, web deploy, server app view, or data tier apps, we'll go ahead and show you those directly in the UI, along with any of the properties that were specialized. So normally, when I do demos anywhere, I usually won't do a demo of service deployment. And the reason that is you can imagine spinning up a VM or a couple of VMs could take 10, 15, 20 minutes. Usually, I won't show a service deployment. But with our new app host model, I will show you a service deployment that's not going to actually create any VMs. You remember I spoke about app hosts. This gives you the ability to deploy databases to existing SQL servers, execute T-SQL scripts, and also deploy web deploy applications with SP1. To existing web servers. So I created a service template that I call Blog Engine Application Host. And it looks very similar to the service template I just showed you that had two tiers, one for the server app B package and one for the database. Now that server app B package was simply a web deploy application that I sequenced. So in my Blog Engine App Host service template, what I've done is I've used the original web deploy package and I've created two tiers, but they're each app host tiers. So you see there's no VMs here, there's no VM properties. If I look at the properties of this tier, for example, all it's going to have is a web deploy package. Right? So I'm going to deploy it to an existing physical server somewhere in the environment, or virtual, right? An existing IIS server out there in the environment. I'm not going to create any virtual machines, so I don't have to specify things like hardware and memory. All I have to do is specify some properties applicable to the web deployment. In my web deploy application, this has a connection string, so I've modeled that connection string with configurable server settings, as you can see in the tooltip, and I'll hover over that one more time. I'm going to ask for the SQL server, or SQL user, and a SQL password. And then even for this parameter, specifies what's the name of the website I'm deploying to, and what do I want the virtual directory to be called. And I'll even ask the end user for that type of input. Now, for the application host itself, I've said that the server name itself is a configurable server setting, so I'm going to ask the end user for that. And I've used the same setting for website here. Now, for web application hosts, we're going to ask you for a few pieces of information. One is, what's the web server you're deploying to? What's the website you're going to deploy the application to? What's the RunAS account that we're going to use that has credentials to deploy to that IIS server and to that website? The authentication type, which could be either NTLM or BASIC, because we're using the WMSVC service to actually do the remote, so the IIS remote management service. And what port? And should you allow an untrusted server certificate, which by default, when I go ahead and enable the management service on an IIS server, it has a self-signed cert, but that's an untrusted cert to the VMM server. So if you've installed a trusted cert, you could uncheck this. If you're using a default cert from IIS, go ahead and check this, and we'll bypass that certificate trust check. And then for the SQL server, we only ask you really for the SQL server name, because we're just going to go ahead and deploy that. And what this tier is going to do is deploy a single database, and it's going to execute a single T-SQL script. And even that T-SQL script is going to use the values of that SQL user and password to create the right SQL user and password when it goes ahead and deploys this database. So I'll ask the user for a SQL username and password one time, and I can leverage it multiple places in the service template model. So I'm going to go ahead and click Configure Deployment for this particular service template. I have to give the service instance a name, so I'll call this my TechEd blog, and I'm going to go ahead and deploy it to my production host group. And the other thing I'll point out to you before I deploy is if I go back into my VMs and services view, I have deployed from a service template as well a production shared SQL server, and you can see it's called SBSQL0003, and I also deployed from a service template a production web farm that has, it is a farm, it's got two tiers, each tier has one node in it, and the primary tier is set up with a web farm framework to do synchronization of web packages. So I'm going to deploy my web package to this machine and my SQL package to this machine. So I switch back to the configure deployment, you can see here's all the service settings that I modeled that I'm being asked for. So I can give some arbitrary password because we're just going to create this through that T-SQL script. Remember, I didn't mark it as encrypted. That's why it doesn't show up as masked here. I give it the SQL server name that I want. And that was the name of that one. A SQL user, so I'll just call it TechEd blog. The web application, so this is the virtual directory name that I want, so the name of the actual web application. And I'll call this TE blog. And the web server is the primary server in that farm. And the website, I'm going to deploy it to a site called New Site. Now, I have a share open here to the inetpub directory of that server. You can see it's sbwebpry0001. And there's my New Site directory. And you can see it's empty right now. And I also have a SQL Management Studio open. And it's connected over to that SQL server I'm deploying to. And I'll refresh this, and you'll see there's no databases on that server other than the system databases. So now I'll go back into my VMM UI. I filled in all the values that I need to provide, and I'll go ahead and deploy the service. I'll switch over to our jobs view so you can see what's going on as part of the service deployment. We're now creating the service instance. We're going to install that DAC application, execute that T-SQL script, so we've already done those. We're now going to install that web deploy application over to that app host, sbwebpry0001. That's completed. I get some output that, hey, we executed this T-SQL script, it executed fine, it had a result exit code of 0. And if I do a couple things, one, go into my new site directory, you'll see there's my blog application, and if I drill into that, there's a bunch of files in there that were all defined in the web deploy package. And if I go back to SQL Management Studio and refresh, you'll see my blog engine database is there. And if I go into the VMM UI, you'll see that we have this TechEd blog service instance that's been created. There's no VMs associated with it, but there is a shared web farm, which will show you the computer name that was deployed to, as well as the SQL, where that's deployed. And even for app hosts, where we don't control the VM, because there's not necessarily a VM in this case, we'll still show you the applications that we installed per app host, as well as the settings. And you can see that my data string, my connection string, did get populated with the values that I used. So now I've deployed this blog engine application without creating any VMs, right? I've leveraged existing infrastructure that's in my environment. So in SP1, we made a number of in-guest changes to our in-guest agent. We really rewrote the thing from scratch from RTM. And it does require .NET 4 for SP1, and we'll go ahead and automatically install that at guest agent installation time. So we'll take care of installing .NET 4 if it's not already there. If you have it sysprepped into your image, we won't go ahead and reinstall it. We'll recognize that it's there, run the installer, and just get our guest agent there. What that means is if you're deploying VMs that are running server core, and they're running Windows Server 2008 R2, they would have to be running SP1 of Server 2008 R2 or above, because that's the only core version that supports .NET 4. But you can deploy services for VMs that are running Windows Server 2003, Server 2008 R2, Server 2008, and Server 2008 R2 core SP1. And then in beta, of course, Windows Server 2012 will also be supported. What we do is we actually deploy the guest agent via an ISO file that we include, and we attach that ISO at deployment time to get the guest agent there. In VMM 2012 RTM, we had a couple notable constraints around service deployment, and we had two requirements for service VMs. One was that service instance VMs were joined to a domain, number one, and secondly, that domain had a two-way trust with the VMM server. And that was because we had this real tight coupling between that agent and the VMM server, where the VMM server actually instructed the agent what to do piecemeal, and the VMM server communicated directly to the agent from the VMM server to the guest agent service inside the VM. When we rewrote the guest agent, what we did was we rewrote it in such a way that it's decoupled from the VMM server. So you can deploy VMs now, services, in SP1 that have no domain requirement, no domain trust requirement to the VMM server. You could even deploy them to a work group. So you could deploy service instance VMs to work group, DMZ, untrusted environments, what have you. For Hyper-V-based VMs, you can also deploy to VMs that have no network connectivity to the VMM infrastructure. Now, in VMM 2012 RTM, whenever you were deploying a service, we would get application packages and script payload into the guest by creating bits jobs within the guest to the artifacts on VMM library servers. So the consequence of that was my service instance VMs needed HTTP or HTTPS connectivity to my VMM library servers in order to get those packages. In SP1, we still have that requirement for service VMs that are deployed to VMware or Citrix Zen server environments. I should have mentioned this earlier. There are nothing you've seen related to services is specific to Hyper-V, VMware, or Citrix Zen server. You can deploy a service to any of those. You could actually write a service template that deploys one tier to VMware, one to Zen server, and one to Hyper-V, should you choose to do so. But if you need to support deployment to VMs that have no network connectivity to the VMM library servers that the application packages reside on, then we're going to require that you have Hyper-V on those. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to package up those resources for you into an ISO, and we're going to then attach that ISO to the VM, and that's where the agent's going to find its payload. So payload transfer in SP1, we introduced a new property on library servers where you can express to us which library servers have connectivity to which VM networks. And if you've expressed that connectivity, in this case I've said this library server, SBVMM CD0514, has connectivity to the Corp VM network. Any VMs that get deployed, service VMs that get deployed to the Corp network, we'll leverage network transfer for those. When we find that the packages aren't available on a library server that's marked with connectivity, that's when we'll do ISO generation. So if you know that you're just deploying inside of your enterprise, all of your VMs are going to have connectivity, at least over HTTPS, to the library servers, you could always mark your VM networks as connected, and you'll take advantage of network-based transfer. The reason you might want to do that is ISO-based transfer can be a little bit slower, depending on how many packages and how large they are. For small packages, you're not really going to notice a difference, but for larger packages, you might. So if you can enable network transfer and you choose to do so, you have that option. And again, for VMware or Zen server, you're going to have to enable network transfer because we won't do ISO payload generation for VMware or Zen server. Oh, the other thing I want to mention is if you're upgrading from VMM 2012 RTM, we will automatically do this work, this association, for all of your existing logical networks. The reason is you couldn't have been doing service deployment if you didn't have connectivity, so we'll mark those all as connected to all library servers. So only for new VM networks would you have to manually make this association. I'll show you what the library server properties look like when I get to the next demo, but I want to move on to updating a service. So I've talked about this a few times. You have an original service instance that was derived from a service template and a version of that service template. And the way you make updates to that is maybe you get a new version of an app from your developer. So you drop that into the VMM library. It's refreshed in. You copy the original template, make your changes, maybe update that app package, add some new roles and features. And then you apply that updated template, you set it to one or more running service instances. And then you can choose to, again, apply the update immediately or defer it to some maintenance window when you're going to come back and make the actual changes. There's two update types that we have. One is what we call in place, and one is what we call image-based. In-place updates means we're going to take those exact running VMs and make the changes on them when you apply that updated template. So we're going to take that machine and reconfigure the hardware, add an updated app, remove an app, execute a new script or something like that. But we also have image-based updates. So if you have applications, and I want to be clear, image-based update is not for every application. You can tell us to do an image-based update if you had an app that was, for example, stateless, or an app that was packaged up as server app V, or an app that you knew where the state was. And in this case, what we'll actually do is replace the operating system for that VM. It'll still have the same SID in Active Directory. It'll be the same VM, the same computer account in Active Directory. But we'll replace the OS, respecialize it, reinstall the apps that were there, re-execute all the scripts, and restore any state that was accrued. So in the server app V case, we'll do that automatically, because that's one of the benefits of using server app V, is it natively tracks any accrued state while the application is running. If you had a web deploy application, we'll allow you to write and execute a save and restore state GCE. So maybe you know where the state is for a particular app. you could write a save state GCE to copy that off to some network share, and a restore state GCE to then copy it back after we've done the image-based update. Again, image-based updates, not for every type of application. I probably wouldn't recommend it for your SQL data tier, for example, because we are going to reinstall everything from scratch. But for stateless apps or server app VApps, a really great way to totally update your operating system. So you can imagine deploying a service instance with Server 2008 R2, and then 6 months later, servicing that service instance such that we'll actually apply SP1 to it by completely replacing the operating system disk. So the update types look very similar. We'll select a tier based on servicing order and upgrade domain. Upgrade domains, for those of you that aren't familiar with them, what this means is if I have a tier that's running multiple instances, I can tell VMM that I want X number of upgrade domains. So if I had a web tier that had four instances and I said I want two upgrade domains, what that means for us is we'll take the four running instances, divide it by the two upgrade domains, take two of those machines, pull them out of the load balancer, do the update, put them back in, and then move on to the next two. So you could actually service a service without any downtime for your end users. So we'll remove those machines from the load balancer, execute a pre-servicing GCE if you've defined it. Again, GCEs are always optional. We'll apply any application level changes, run any post-servicing GCEs, uninstall, reinstall applications if we have to, re-add back to the load balancer and move on. Image-based updates are very similar, but the first thing we do is we add a data disk to the machine. And we do that so that we can, for Server App V's case, that's where we'll save the state during the operation. So that's also when we give you the opportunity to execute your own custom save state GCE, should you have one. So we'll automatically take care of Server App V state. Then we'll swap the OS disk. We'll recustomize the OS, again, based on the service template definition. We'll reinstall all the applications, re-execute all the scripts, and then we'll automatically restore Server App V state, and that's also where we'll execute any restore state GCEs that you've written to restore custom state for your application. Add to the load balancer and move on. So I'm going to move back to my demo machine and show you what an update looks like. So the first thing I want to show you is I have this blog application right here called ProBlog. And ProBlog has a single VM with a single application, Blog Engine. And there's two versions of Blog Engine that I have. One of them writes to local XML files, so it doesn't need a database. And if I pull up this template, which is called Standard Blog 2.0, I'll show you what it looks like. So this is a pretty simple service. It's one tier, and it's got a Blog Engine package. And I also deployed SQL when I deployed this, because Blog Engine can run, again, either writing to local XML files or writing to a database. But I have an updated version of this template, which is called version 3.0. And if I open that, you'll see it's got an updated Blog Engine package, so now we're at 3.0, and it has a SQL database and a T-SQL script that's going to get executed. So I can service my existing Blog Engine application and transform it from running the XML version of Blog Engine to leveraging a SQL database as the back end. Before I do this, I'll refresh this machine, which is SBBlog 0004. There's a question. Sure. Right. Yep. So the question was, are there any best practices around the versioning? I used 2.0 and 3.0, right? I used major versioning. The release field for us is a freeform string field, so you can use it however you choose. If you wanted to do 1.1, 1.1.1, 1.2.1, that's totally up to you. Again, you probably don't want to maintain thousands of service templates, so after you've upgraded to a certain level, you may want to remove some of the ones that are no longer in use, or even rename them to something like, you know, backup, so that they don't show up in that tree, that lineage. Available. So this is what Blog Engine looks like when it's using the XML store, and you can see the first post, and it says, welcome to Blog Engine 1.6. And I'm going to come into my VMM UI, and I'm going to take that existing service, and you can see that's the machine, 0004, and I'm going to set template. And I'm going to tell VMM that I want to use a different version of the template. And you saw I had a lot of service templates in my library, but I'm only given ones that are related to this one. So I have the existing one, which is 2.0, and my updated one, 3.0. So I'm going to go ahead and choose version 3. And version 2, I didn't have any configurable settings, because it's just using XML. So I had no connection string information. Version 3, in that service template, I'm asking for SQL user and password. So I'm going to give it some arbitrary SQL user and some arbitrary password. And now what happens is we're going through. This is where I can choose to apply updates immediately or to the machines in place, so in-place servicing, or image-based, which is deploy new virtual machines. Image-based can take a while because you have to reprovision the VMs. So I'm going to choose to apply in place. Now we're diffing the service templates and figuring out the differences. And I can drill in and see what the differences are. So we can see that what's going to happen is I'm going to update application. So I'm going from Blog Engine Package 2.0 to 3.0. And I'm also going to install a new application, which is that Blog Engine DAC pack, that database. And I'm given a warning because I have a single upgrade domain. So it's possible that my users could have outage because I don't have upgrade domains configured for this service. And this is where I can choose to either apply the updates immediately after finishing this wizard, or the default is to leave this unchecked, and I can come back and then apply those changes during a maintenance window. But everything's already been set up for me ahead of time, so that at maintenance window time, it's a simple matter of saying, go ahead and apply that template now. I'm going to apply it immediately because I don't want to wait around for a maintenance window. And I'll switch back over to the jobs view, and you can see what's going on here. This one usually takes a minute to a minute and a half because we're uninstalling an app or upgrading a server app v package from one version. We're installing a new DAC pack, executing a T-SQL script. So there's quite a few things going on behind the scenes. Any questions while we're waiting for this one to complete? Yes. The question was, is there any mechanism in VMM to exercise control over types of templates that can be created? And the answer is no. You can set control over who can author templates and who cannot, and who can deploy only from templates and who cannot. And you can also exercise control over, for people who only have the deploy right, for example, you can assign them specific templates that have been created, but there's no way to say you can only create a template of SQL Server type. Because really, the templates to us, we know what's inside of them, but we don't have that higher level metadata about, oh, this is going to be a SQL Server template. So again, you can control who can author, who can deploy, and who can deploy certain templates that are already existing in the environment. And then you can also decide who can share templates with one another. So sharing is a right that you can give. So you can give your authors the ability to share, and they could decide to share out specific templates with specific groups of users. So that job's completed. I'm just given a warning. And I should have backed this up by saying, the reason I went and serviced this is my developer gave me a new version of the web deploy, of the new version of the server app v package for Blog Engine and said, I've tested this, this thing's ready to roll out, and this is going to be a great experience for our users, right? So I said, okay, great, looks good. I've gone ahead and applied that new version of the template, and I go back to check my website, so I'm just going to refresh it, and what happens is I get an error. And I call my developer and say, wait, you gave me this new version of the package, but it's not working. He says, oh, I saw that a couple times on my machine. What you have to do is you have to actually refresh the page a couple times, and it should come back. So I say, okay, well, I'll try that just to see. So I refresh it, and I wait around, and sure enough, it comes back. And you can see it's changed. It's using Microsoft SQL Server now, according to the blog post. And if I even go back into my VMM UI, you can see that same service now has a blog database and a blog engine. And that package has the right connection string that I gave it. But I say, you know, that's kind of a lousy experience for my end users to have to refresh the page, right? What, are they going to get this error every third time? Or is every fifth user going to get it? I don't sign off on this package anymore because it's not up to our SLA requirements and our specific functional requirements. So I'm going to roll back to the previous version. And you can give me a new package later when you've worked through this particular bug. So I use that example to show you that you don't have to just roll forward. You can also roll backwards. You can also skip versions. You could immediately deploy an instance of that 3.0 template. So I'm going to go and say, you know, I don't like that behavior. That's not going to be a great experience. So I'm going to go back to version 2.0 of this template. So I choose 2.0. Now I'm told these settings are being deleted because they don't exist in the version of the template you're going to because it doesn't need a SQL connection string. So I click Next. I'm going to apply them immediately again because I want this thing back up and running. And I'm going to apply the updates. So we've diffed the templates, and if I drill into that again, you'll see that we're going to uninstall the DAC pack, and we're going to update the Blog Engine application from the current version of 3 back to 2. So I click Next, Finish. Strangely enough, deleting usually is faster than installing, so this job usually completes fairly quickly, 15, 20 seconds or so. So we'll just watch the progress of the job. And the jobs will update if I just stayed on the job, but they will refresh a little bit faster in this build if I navigate on and off of them. So that's why I'm doing that, just to see when we'll get our incremental updates coming through. So you can see we've uninstalled the database application, and now we're going to go ahead and reinstall that Blog Engine application and go from 3.0 to 2.0. We've updated the server app V application, and the job's done. And if I go back into the VMM UI, you can see the database is gone, and you can also see that my connection string is back to this generic connection string. And if I refresh the Blog Engine page itself, it should come back to the original one, which is not going to be using Microsoft SQL Server, but the original page we saw before we started. So I'm able to not only apply updates, but I'm also able to easily roll back in the event of a problem occurring. And you could automate all of this through PowerShell. There was a session that was given a couple days ago that showed detecting a new package being generated out of Visual Studio, dropping it into the VMM library, updating the service template, deploying a new instance, running a web test. That web test failed and automatically rolling back. So you could totally orchestrate all of this activity by using System Center Orchestrator, calling into our PowerShell layer. Let's switch back over to the deck. I don't think we have too many more slides. So I showed you updating a service. So everyone's familiar with VMM 2008 R2. We know we have refreshers around host refreshers and VM refreshers. So in 2012 RTM, we built a service level refresher. And essentially what it does is goes out and periodically queries the state of all your service instances. And it really has two states, either OK or needs attention. And needs attention is just at least one VM in that service has a problem. It's either missing or it's in a failed state. And you can go ahead and drill into the service instance and figure out which VM or VMs are causing the problem and go ahead and fix that. And then we'll, you know, refresh that in periodically. And then we have actions that are available. And actions for us are available at one of three levels. There are certain things you can do at the service level itself. So services, you can start them, which means start all the VMs in the service, pause them, which means pause all the VMs in the service, stop, shut down, and delete. At the tier level, there's a scale-out wizard that we built. So the tier itself, you can right-click and say, I want to scale out this tier if it's marked as a scale-out tier. We have a new wizard for that. That's also available through PowerShell. And finally, there are some things we still ask that you do at the VM level. So we don't have a notion of migrating an entire service or checkpointing an entire service. But you could certainly use PowerShell to get a service instance, enumerate all the VMs in that service, and then call migrate for each of them or call checkpoint for each of them. So you could do that through PowerShell. We just haven't exposed those as service level actions in 2012. So I'll switch back one more time and show you what the scale-out wizard looks like real quick. So for any particular tier that's marked as a scale-out tier, for example, my web farm, my secondary tier is marked as a scale-out tier. I can just right-click and click scale-out. And that's going to bring up a new wizard that we have. And it just confirms the tier that I want. So that's the secondary tier. I'll say that I'm using a pattern name for this tier, so I just want VMM to generate this for me, but I could give it a new name if I wanted to. Since I deployed as an admin, I have the ability to actually select which host I want this machine to go to. If I was a self-service user, automatic placement would kick in, and we would just find out if the cloud that this service is being hosted in has enough capacity to do the scale-out operation. So I'll take the one and only host that I have access to here. And then I can, again, override things like the computer name and the virtual machine location. I'm going to leave everything the default. I could say what the properties are for the machine. And then, again, most of you are familiar with VMM. You'll know that almost all of our wizards and almost all of our dialogues have this view script button. So if I wanted a way to automate this in response to an ops manager alert, or if I wanted to give people some simple action to execute a script to do scale out, at the end of that wizard, I can click View Script. This is exactly what our UI is going to do behind the scenes. So I could take the contents of this script, parameterize it, and then use it in conjunction with Ops Manager, System Center Orchestrator, or just my own custom script. And then I would just click Scale Out, and we would add a new machine to that tier, put it behind the load balancer, and all that good stuff. I think that's the last slide. So for some reason, my related tracks one isn't showing up. I'll switch over to my laptop again, and I will bring up some related sessions, even though nearly all of them probably occurred in the past. You can make a note of them and then go back and download the slides and watch the video once that's posted. I'll pull that up and leave that here on the screen so that you can see that, because there are a number of good sessions out there. I'm happy to stick around and take any other questions, so I'll just leave this posted on the screen. Thank you very much for attending.